Hi, this is Newt. Due to the virus, I'm recording from home, so you may notice a difference in audio quality. On this episode of Newt's World, on May 30th, SpaceX, Falcon 9, and NASA launched a manned space mission. The launch brought a new era of space exploration to the space coast of Florida. This historic mission was the first manned launch from U.S. soil since the conclusion of the Space Shuttle program in 2011, and the first manned commercial launch in history. The recent mission is the first to illustrate that the future of space travel will be driven by American innovation and entrepreneurship. However, the Chinese are also heavily investing in space, with support and funding by the Chinese Communist Party. We are beginning the next great space race. It's the United States versus China, in a competition to be first to create systems for commercial space travel, the first to establish outposts on the moon, and ultimately, the first to colonize other planets. Never has the time been more important to discuss the future of space exploration and the importance of space as an infrastructure investment. I'm pleased to welcome my guest, Charles Miller, president and owner of NextGen Space LLC. He provides consulting services to NASA, DARPA, the U.S. Air Force, and entrepreneurial companies at the intersection of civil space, commercial space, and public policy. He recently served as a member of the NASA transition team for President-elect Donald Trump. Let me start, if I could, Charles. What got you so involved in space? You clearly have spent your entire career immersed in this whole zone of how getting human beings out into space.
Well, Newt, I remember when I was a small child in Northern California in a rural community in my backyard staring up the stars, and I read science fiction, and I decided as a young boy that I was going to go to space. That's what I wanted to do. And I originally wanted to be an astronaut, but I basically committed my life to opening space to all people and getting life as we know it off the planet and into the solar system. I love what I do. It's obviously hard, but I like the challenge if you're in the space frontier and space technology and space business.
What would you say is the biggest change in space and in our whole approach to space from the time you first got involved?
Well, the biggest change is the privatization of space. And we are getting back to our roots of what makes America great, and that leveraging free enterprise. Apollo was amazing and wonderful, but in some respects, we learned the wrong lesson from Apollo. It was a big government program to beat the Soviets, and we thought because of Apollo that government could do anything, and we actually learned the wrong lesson. Right after Apollo, NASA returned to the roots of how government agencies operate. It couldn't innovate in the 70s and 80s like we anticipated it would. And it's taken decades of step by step turning this huge ship that was focused on, I call it socialist space approach, to much more free enterprise and much more commercial partnerships, like what made America the world leader in aviation. And now we're finally getting back to doing that in space.
Why should we invest this many resources in space?
I think that's a critical question because a lot of people don't understand why we're doing stuff in space. The future of humanity is in doubt. We're right now at this crossroads where we're either going to have a future of humanity that's full of freedom and justice and respect for individual rights, or it's going to be a future dominated by tyranny. And the leading form of tyranny on the planet right now is the Chinese Communist Party. The Chinese think long term, and it's actually one of their finest attributes. And we need to think long term as well. And space actually is the critical linchpin in answering the question of whether the future is going to be one of freedom or whether it's going to be humanity living in chains.
It's really interesting to me because I'm sort of a child of Sputnik and the early stages of Apollo. And for a very, very long time, our primary competitor was the Soviet Union and then the Russian Federation. In a lot of ways now, they're beginning to be dramatically surpassed by the Chinese. How do you view the Russian program right now?
Well, Russia has got a lot of brilliant engineers, but they're collapsing. They're in a slow motion collapse. They haven't innovated in decades. The best and brightest in Russia, which used to go into their space program, are going in all these other industries or leaving Russia if they can. And so they are living on the results of the investments they made in the 70s and 80s. They really haven't created anything fundamentally new since the 70s and 80s. Russia isn't a threat at all to us in space. It is China.
Have you been surprised at the momentum of the Chinese program?
Actually, no. I saw what China was doing with Huawei. I saw what China did with taking over the entire global leadership in the drone industry. 15 years ago, American companies were the leader of communication technology industries, and Huawei came out of nowhere to be the world leader in 5G. There's a reason for that. First of all, they're very smart and very hardworking, but they got huge subsidies from the Chinese government as well. Huawei is part of their grand national strategy. The same thing's going to happen in space. It's starting to happen. They're providing huge subsidies to Chinese commercial satellite companies. So the same thing that's happened in Huawei, that happened in the solar industry, that happened in the drone industry, is starting now in the commercial space industry. And about half of the Chinese commercial space companies that have ever been formed have been formed in the last 5 years. It's just a huge amount of activity going on there. I think this is a huge threat to U.S. national security. If you think long term, Newt, the future of space clearly is, I think everybody agree, in the long term, and I measure long term in centuries, is there's going to be tens of billions of people in the long term living off the planet. And we all know that the resources are limited here on Earth, but space has virtually unlimited resources. So in the long term, whoever dominates space is really going to dominate the culture and the values of Earth. And to be able to control Earth, what happens in the next 10 or 20 years of space will determine whether it's American values that go out on the space frontier or whether it's Chinese values. So we get to choose whether the future of humanity is one of freedom and opportunity and respect for the individual or the Chinese Communist Party values by what we do in space. So that's really the choice.
And how would you describe the scale and the momentum of their current program?
They're rapidly increasing investment in the commercial space sector. It's hard to see all the stimulus and subsidies, but what we know is they probably put more than $1 billion into their commercial space industry in the last decade, but they've committed to do much more. They've already passed us in space launch. Even with the huge success of SpaceX, China has more launches to orbit than we do. They're copying us and stealing our technology. They have Chinese companies investing in U.S. commercial space companies to try to steal their technology and all kinds of tricks going on. They tried to steal Boeing's satellite technology last year and got caught doing it through a commercial space company. Right now, Chinese companies are trying to buy the technology and the rights of OneWeb in a bankruptcy. It's really scary, Newt. We might allow them to do that.
So they have both a human flight project, they've talked about building a China space station, and the first people to land on the dark side of the moon. How do you assess their human space program?
They're basically learning from the Russians. They copied all the Russians' technology 10 or 20 years ago because that was easy. They're really more focused on resources. And I anticipate them focus on dominating the resources of space because they see that as the critical resources of the next 100 years. Again, they think long term. They're going to have humans in space very soon. They're already starting to work on reusable launch vehicle technology that companies like SpaceX and Blue Origin are doing. So they're coming fast. I think whatever we do, they're just going to copy us and go as fast as they can. We're doing humans in space, and in a few years, we're going to see many more Chinese in space. They're going to a space station, and as you said, they're planning on putting humans on the moon in the very near future as well.
Do we have any idea how their China space station will compare with the International Space Station?
The Chinese space station will not be as good as the International Space Station. But the issue is, we're not sure what we're going to do after the International Space Station. There are some people who just like to deorbit it. And if that's the case, that the Chinese space station will be the only space station in the world. Now, again, like we talked about the privatization of human spaceflight, the next space station should be privately owned and operated, and NASA should be a customer, right? NASA can lease space stations in orbit, and they can be a good customer and focus on being the explorers. They don't need to get into the real estate construction and real estate owner business. They should be Lewis and Clark. So that's the future. So we need to do that. Otherwise, China's space station will be the only game in town.
In terms of investing resources, would we be better off to go ahead and have a RFP for a competitive private sector development of a station on the model you're describing, where they build it and then we lease it? Or would we be better off in the short run to take those resources and refurbish and renew the International Space Station?
The future of the space station is to allow private owned and operated companies to develop and test out a space station while docked at the International Space Station. You want to assemble your private space station there, test it all out in orbit, make sure it's working, and then you can let go and push away from the International Space Station. You want NASA to be a customer and say, hey, we'll buy services from that commercial space station, but they can help private industry figure out how to build space stations too and transfer that knowledge to private industry.
When you look at how we've gone into space, how big a deal is it to try to actually get to the moon and stay by the end of 2024?
I think it's really important to go to the moon in the right way and using commercial industry. The only way to get back to the moon really fast by 2024 is to leverage the speed of private industry. I think it's critical. It actually forces NASA to do things differently to go faster, because they are unable to go fast now. It is critical to go fast because we have to change how we do things. And the reason the moon is important is it's a huge source of resources for the long-term development and industrialization of space. I see in the next 10 years, we're going to have a $1 trillion economy in space, and these leveraging commercial reusable rockets that are like airplanes and the resources of space, we're going to create millions of jobs here on Earth. And the real question is whether those are going to be American jobs or maybe they'll be Chinese jobs, and we get to choose.
From your perspective, one of the big things is the continued emphasis on these new entrepreneurial companies like SpaceX and Blue Origin, and then the many smaller companies that surround them. I remember Bob Walker and I were working on reusable rockets in the late 80s, early 90s, with NASA being very, very resistant.
I lived that same fight.
So it's a real thrill to watch these rockets come back down and get to be reused. In your mind, how big a breakthrough is that in our long-term capability to get access to space?
If I was talking to the president and I could only tell him one thing, I would say we need to double down on reusable commercial launch vehicles. That if there's one strategic capability and technology that we need to accelerate, is what is going on with commercial reusable launch vehicles. I think the president gets it. He's talked about the two reusable boosters that the Falcon Heavy had land at the same time at the Cape. It was just amazing. It totally changes your perspective. We need to accelerate that. We should create a program to accelerate commercial development of reusable launch vehicles, just like we had the NACA working with private industry to accelerate the development of commercial airplanes. Whoever owns those transportation systems gets to control the space frontier.
In that context, why has the space launch system been so expensive and so much longer to develop than the original contract?
Well, the space launch system was the jobs program. And I have good friends who work on the space launch system. It's a rocket to nowhere. But it's got very powerful political patrons to protect the jobs where they are. We're spending billions of dollars a year that it's going down a hole that is never going to produce any benefits other than the jobs for the future of humanity in space.
Do you expect it to ever fly?
It might fly once and they might cancel it. If the president said we should cancel the space launch system, we're wasting the money, it would go away. But until someone stands up and says, this is a total waste and we need to spend the money on something that's much more effective, it'll keep flying. The people working on it, they don't want to launch it because they're worried it'll blow up and they'll lose their jobs. They always have plenty of reasons to never launch. They'll always come up with, well, they need to work on this, right? And if your objective is just to protect your job, it may never fly. It just may keep working on it.
At some point, that becomes almost an absurdity. It worries me a little bit because I think this first one will represent several billion dollars of sunk cost.
Imagine this, Newt. They built the Saturn V launch vehicle from Kennedy declaring in 61 to first launched in 1968, in 7 years, right? They've been working on the space launch system since 2005. And they've been working on it for 15 years. They've spent upwards of almost $30 billion on it. $30 billion, 15 years, haven't launched once. They brag that they're basically producing the Saturn V today. And it's about the same launch capability. But the Saturn V launched a whole bunch of times, and it went from 61 to 68 with its first launch. So there is no comparison. It's the similar technology. It's 40 years later. We should be able to be faster than we did in Apollo with the Saturn V. It's twice the time, and it hasn't launched once. And the reason is it may never launch because, as I mentioned, if the time it launches may be the time everybody loses their job.
Since it's a dramatically bigger rocket, is it also dramatically more complicated than the Falcon or the Blue Origin?
It's not dramatically bigger anymore. It's only slightly bigger than the Falcon Heavy. They brag that they're using shuttle rocket engines and shuttle boosters, and they're using the same tooling they used for the shuttle tank. If you're going to brag about it, it should have been cheaper and simpler and easier. Mike Griffin bragged about this was simpler and cheaper and it was the best way to go. And now it's 15 years later and $30 billion. The model's wrong. Now we have proof the government doesn't need to design and operate launch vehicles. And that's the definitive proof point of SpaceX.
You've got all the time the government bureaucracy and its prime contractor have been piddling around. You've had both SpaceX and Blue Origin every single year making progress. And as I understand it, even if the space launch system launches, those are not reusable. There's some astonishing cost in the rockets and the engines alone every time you launch them.
So the marginal cost of just part of the Celeste launch is over $1 billion a year. If you take all the overhead that is applied to the rocket pads and the NASA centers, the fixed costs of all the labor that's working on SLS, the estimates that the cost of a single SLS launch is $2 to $3 billion. It's just atrocious. So you can buy a Falcon Heavy, which is almost as capable as the SLS, for $90 million commercial. Buy two Falcon Heavies, $180 million, and you have more launch capability than the SLS. What's the good deal? $2 to $3 billion or $180 million, right? It's just obvious to anybody who looks at this what the U.S. government should do.
When you look at the emerging reusable systems, Virgin Galactic, it seems to me, is kind of right at the margin. It's not quite a space system in that it tends to currently be planning to do subspace, but it's doing a lot of things that will begin to create a market. What's your reaction to things like Virgin Galactic?
I think Virgin is a great incremental step to allow many more people to experience space. The plan for going up in the Virgin rocket is go up for 3 to 5 minutes, be able to see the curvature of the Earth, be above the atmosphere, be able to look down on the Earth and experience weightlessness. So I think it's an amazing capability that'll allow people to be part of what's going on in space because they can't afford to take a ride to orbit. There's millions of people can afford a Virgin Galactic launch. So I think it's a great start. The Virgin people talk about they want to take the next step to build reusable space planes to chase after Jeff Bezos at Blue Origin and Elon at SpaceX. And I fully support them doing that.
Now, I'm not familiar with Vulcan Aerospace, but is it also developing?
So Vulcan is developing the world's biggest airplane, but has recently got out of the business. Paul Allen was the owner of Vulcan Aerospace, and he died a few years ago. But he was planning on challenging Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk and Richard Branson with building a reusable launch vehicle as well.
That's tragic. I didn't know whether or not his heirs were going to sustain that. So let me ask briefly about the moon and Mars. In your estimate, how plausible is it that we can actually land as the beginning of permanent landing by the end of 2024?
It's plausible if we're willing to take risks. If we're conservative and are risk averse, we won't get there. The NASA of our fathers that took us to the moon were willing to take risks. I'm worried right now. One of the huge battles going on in the agency is those who are willing to take more risks go faster, and those who are much more risk averse, the engineers that grew up in the shuttle program. And we should choose one way or the other. And if we're willing to take risks, then we can do it. SpaceX took 18 years to build a human launcher to orbit, but they could have gone much faster if they've been allowed to take more risks. They could have done it in 2012 or 2014 if we'd done a different approach.
As you know, Bezos is trying to build this even bigger rocket that is supposed to ultimately be able to go to Mars. And it blew up the day before the Falcon 9 took the two astronauts to space. I saw a video of it. Apparently quite an impressive explosion. If I were Musk, I would have been a little concerned that night. But I think he has a pretty good engineer's sense of this is how you make progress.
The reason that he's the world leader in space launch right now is because he's willing to take risks and blow up rockets. They have developed the culture in SpaceX is if you're not blowing up rockets, you're not learning anything. In fact, that is the origin of the American space program. The Atlas launch vehicle, the first 11 times it launched, it blew up. But they didn't cancel the program. They didn't slow it down. They were launching every month or two. They were launching a new rocket. And the reason is it was critically important because the Atlas became an intercontinental ballistic missile and defended America, and they had to go fast. And the way you go fast is you don't wait until everything's perfect on paper and all designed out. That takes years or decades. You learn faster by actually launching something and learning what breaks and what doesn't. And so I really respect the SpaceX team by their willingness to, right in front of the world, blow up rockets.
From your perspective, is landing on the moon and staying a major turning point if we can pull it off?
The reason we go to the moon has to be right. We need to go back to the moon to industrialize the moon. We need the large-scale industrialization of space. If we go back to the moon with the purposes we're going to mine and develop the resources of the moon for the water, for the fuel, between having reusable launch vehicles and mining the water on the moon for rocket propellant, we can go anywhere in the solar system cheaply. That has to be the primary driver of why we go to the moon. And if you do that, if you mine the resources of the moon and you have reusable launch vehicle, it's easy to go back to the moon and stay. If you do it that way, we can stay there much more affordably and it becomes a virtuous cycle.
And then from there, you will go out to Mars and to the asteroids.
We should make it easy to go to Mars because we mine the resources of the moon and have reusable launch vehicles, and it's easy to go to Mars. And then that's when you win, right? You can go everywhere in the solar system affordably.
And if we're going to go to Mars, don't we almost have to have some kind of nuclear engine so that you can cut the travel time dramatically?
Well, a nuclear engine is not required. It's a major incremental improvement. The first step is mining the resources of the moon to use propellant to use the rocket to go to Mars. And then the next step is to upgrade that to nuclear to go faster.
If we're going to do a serious infrastructure bill, 10% of it ought to be set aside for space. Space is such a big part of our future that you have to get in the habit of thinking of space as being equal to your railroads or your ports or your highways or your airports as something you want to invest in over and over again so that you build really serious infrastructure. Does that concept make sense to you?
I support the overall concept, as you stated. I personally would not know how to spend 10%. I would be worried it's too much money. If you're a government agency, if you give them too much money, they'll spend a lot of it in a wasteful way. So I worry about that. You have to spend the money in an effective way so you get the result. I would just add that you need to make them do it in the right way. That's just as important because you could spend $100 billion on space infrastructure and it could be more SLSs, right? You don't want that. Depends how you spend it is equally important. If there's public-private partnerships, it needs to be privately owned and operated infrastructure. In that case, I think spending 10% of the infrastructure bill on space makes total sense.
Assuming you can find a way to do it that's effective, are there enough things over the next 10 to 15 years that could usefully be built and developed that kind of money would be a rational investment?
First of all, one of the biggest things going on in the space industry right now is communication satellites. There's a revolution going on in big constellations of communication satellites, and whoever owns that industry gets to dominate global communications for the next 100 years. And if it's China, we all know what China would do if they control global communications, and they would use it to listen in on you. They would use it to control. They would turn the communications off if they didn't like you. First is reusable launch vehicles, because they allow you to build these big commercial constellations with tens of thousands of satellites. And next would be stimulating these big constellations, and then would be the resources of the moon. So between those, if you could take that 10% infrastructure bill and you could put it in some type of fund that's invested over a decade and it's invested in commercial space infrastructure, I think it would be a wonderful investment. I actually think that a space authority should be how we develop the moon and leverage using a space authority like an airport authority. So if you took some of that space infrastructure fund and you gave it to an authority to develop the resources, that would be a much more promising approach.
Listen, thank you, Charles.
Well, thank you, Newt.
Thank you to my guest, Charles Miller. You can read more about the new space race, the U.S. versus China, on our show page at newtsworld.com. Newt's World is produced by Gingrich 360 and iHeartMedia. Our executive producer is Debbie Myers, and our producer is Garnsey Sloan. The artwork for the show was created by Steve Pendle. Special thanks to the team at Gingrich 360. Please email me with your questions at gingrich360.com/questions. I'll answer them in future episodes. If you've been enjoying Newt's World, I hope you'll go to Apple Podcasts and both rate us with 5 stars and give us a review so others can learn what it's all about. On the next episode of Newt's World, how do we reform the American healthcare system, moving from sick care to healthcare? My guest is Dr. Marty Makary from Johns Hopkins. He is the author of The Price We Pay, What Broke American Healthcare and How to Fix It. I'm Newt Gingrich. This is Newt's World.